The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Ready, Set, Spill. I'm Lindsay Carter, the founder and CEO of Set Active, a new mother and the host of Ready, Set, Spill.
Today's podcast guest is disrupting a historically male-dominated industry and is building her jewelry brand with a vision to design forever pieces that are both inspirational and attainable. As you may have seen on social media, Ring Concierge finds its success by strategically blurring the lines between retailer and influencer. On this episode, I welcome Ring Concierge founder and CEO, Nicole Wegman, to the show Ready, Set, Spill. Hi, welcome to Ready, Set, Spill.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. I feel like we're like Insta besties. So like to see you in real life, I felt like I already knew you. Just catching up on our children.
Yeah. Story of my life, meeting people face to face who I already feel like I know and we're friends and I know, I've seen their houses and their children. Yeah. Like, it's a little creepy, like how much I know about everybody that I've never met in person before. But
social media is creepy, though. Like, that's what happens. I feel like I can like tell you, write a whole book on someone's life just through social media.
Oh, totally.
Like, tell you who their boyfriend is, where they were born, what the family's like.
Do I like their new sofa?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay, well, I always start these with a fun little icebreaker. If you could wear one, only one, which I know is hard for you, piece of jewelry for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I think I can actually answer this question. Diamond studs.
Okay.
Just like a pair of big diamond studs. I mean, as big as humanly possible if it's my only piece forever. I was at dinner with my girlfriends a few years ago, and I always wear studs, and they're like, you know, a stupid size. They're really big. And I had forgotten to put them in that day. And one of my best friends was like staring at me the whole dinner. She's like, you just don't like look great. Like, are you tired? Are you sick? What's going on? And then an hour into the meal, she goes, oh my God, I know what it is. You don't have your studs in. She's like, you need to wear those. They make you prettier. I was like, oh my, first of all, mean, but noted, you know?
I mean, like, I'm more dropping my jaw because I'm like, okay, now I need to go tell my husband that I need a pair of diamond studs.
I mean, I think like it's just this huge sparkle next to your face. So even if you're having like a bad makeup day, it's distracting.
Oh my God.
So I think it's a beauty trick, these studs, I'm telling you.
I would say that is a beauty trick. And now it's all I'm going to think about for the rest of the podcast. And I'm like, okay, I need diamond studs now. Okay, well, let's start. For anyone who doesn't know who you are, who is Nicole Wegman?
So I am the founder and CEO of Ring Concierge, which is a fine jewelry company. I started it 10 years ago. It started with bridal and now includes anything and everything you could ever want that's made with diamonds, platinum, or gold. So we have a website with pieces starting at $70, you know, think anklets, bracelets, rings. And then we do custom bespoke pieces up in the seven figures. So we're $70 to seven figures. Like, we really have everything.
But something that I think that you guys just introduced that I personally think is different from all the other jewelry brands out there that are like, especially in bridal specifically, is you created a line that has the look of all of these like ginormous rings that people want, but for under 10K or up to 10K, I think it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I've never seen anything like that before because what was it? 4 years, 4.5 years ago when I got engaged, I wasn't in a place with my husband where I could get, you know, the dream ring that every girl dreams of. And it would have been so nice to have that. So what was like your idea behind that? How long, what is it called? How long did it take to like put that in motion?
Yeah, I mean, I think across the board, one of my biggest strategies when developing product and whether it be just the fashion jewelry or the actual bridal is how do we get people the most bang for their buck? Visually, you can, you know, spend $50,000 and have a 1-carat perfect diamond, or you can spend $50,000 and have like a 4-carat killer looking stone, you know? So just kind of educating people on all the different ways you can maximize budget, because at the end of the day, if we're being honest, women just really want the biggest looking ring possible. And how do we get them there? And we kind of think through that with everything we do. And like, let's say you can't afford diamond studs, because a lot of people can't, you know, diamond studs are price prohibitive for many. We just came out with a line of illusion studs.
I saw that.
It's crazy. People are losing their minds. And it's basically, it looks like a round stud, but if you get up really close, it's made with marquee and princess cut diamonds. And we set them in a way where it looks really seamless. It looks like one diamond, but the price is so much less if you use a bunch of smaller diamonds rather than one big one.
Wow.
So, you know, you can get the look of like a $30,000 pair of studs for $2,000. So anything we can think of to help people get the look they want without, you know, having to spend huge amounts of money, we always try to think that way.
That is So smart. And now I'm going to look at those studs after this because I'm still thinking about it, by the way. Can you recall what your first, because it says that you've loved jewelry since you were two. What was like your first encounter with jewelry where you were like, this is what I want to do as my career?
So I'll tell you about the two-year-old story first, because I don't remember this, obviously, but my parents took me to Mardi Gras, which separately, why, you know, I was 2 years old, like inappropriate. And I was apparently on my dad's shoulders, like going down the street with like the topless woman throwing the beads. Again, why was I there? I don't know. Parenting choices. But I started collecting all the beads, and apparently I didn't take them off for like years. I would wear like 20 strings of Mardi Gras beads every single day of my life for years. So I think it was apparently in me. But cut to when I was getting engaged. So this was 10 years ago now. I was 26 and we were looking for rings. And I don't know, have you ever been to the Diamond District in New York City?
Not in New York City, no.
Don't go. Okay. I don't recommend it. It is super sketchy feeling. You walk up and down the street. It looks like it's 100 years old. There's like all these men standing on the sidewalk buying, trading, like, are you selling? And they like haggle you as you walk down the street. And this was the most expensive purchase we had ever made outside of our apartment, right? So this was a really big deal to us, as it is to most couples. And the experience was just so weird and opaque. And you didn't know if you could trust the person you were working with, the diamond you were buying. They had, you know, terrible taste. Like, forget it with the settings. The settings were so ugly. And I had never thought about jewelry as a career, but I'd always just loved it, as like most women do. You just love jewelry, but, you know, usually can't afford much. And I realized, oh my God, there's this massive void for a millennial woman. God forbid it's a woman in this space, because it was completely male dominated, to create a company that has an experience that we would actually enjoy shopping, like a millennial focused shopping experience. And that's kind of when it clicked that I could have a career in this space, because I had never even thought about being in the jewelry world.
So what was your first step? Like, I feel like, you know, I love jewelry a lot. I also was the same. I had like a little purse with my Little Mermaid makeup set and like all my fake jewelry. I actually wore ring pops all the time because I was like, obviously it's a huge diamond.
Sure.
Right?
Beautiful.
Beautiful. And I wore them all the time. I wouldn't even put them in my mouth. I just would like walk around and be like, look at my diamond ring. So like I'm sitting here and I'm asking myself like, huh, like, you know, I was able to start an activewear brand, but if I was going to get started in jewelry, like, I don't even know where I would start for that.
Yeah, I think so. I came from retail. I was at Macy's and then Bloomingdale's. I worked on product development. I worked in buying. So I did have some kind of, and I majored in fashion merchandising. So I did have some kind of formalized training when it came to fashion and retail. Knew nothing about fine jewelry. And I think not knowing how the industry worked, which it is so antiquated, and not understanding the complications, the dynamics, worked in my favor, because I was like, okay, let me just start a company based on how I think a retailer should operate, using, you know, like real technology and email and like not having everything paper receipts, which is literally how the industry operates. So in one regard, I was super naive because I just didn't know how any of it worked. But on the other side, I think that's what made it so successful, was just creating something from scratch based on how I thought like an e-commerce experience should be. So in finding partners and how to navigate the industry, that was challenging because it's very family run. You know, grandpas pass it down to their sons, who pass it down to their sons, like never a woman, by the way. And it's a very like handshake business, and you have to know somebody. It's very weird. So I did have to find a couple people to partner with that were younger and kind of understood my vision and helped me navigate it. And it took many, many years to really understand it. And I still use a lot of partners in the diamond world, and we have amazing people we work with. But aside from that, it was like creating any other, you know, type of e-commerce brand.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense when you lay it out like that. When you first started Ring Concierge, though, like something, let me fast forward and back up at the same time, because something I love, it's so entertaining to watch your stories. Like, I never know if I'm going to get stories about Zoe, or if I'm going to get stories about your house project, or if it's going to be jewelry or your team. And I love all the different aspects. Or my most favorite story recently was the one where you were in Aspen.
Yeah.
That was like, you left me on cliffhanger. I felt like I was watching a TV show. I was like, I have to know what happened next. Was it always your intention to, you know, have Ring Concierge, the Instagram, be all-encompassing of all those things, or did it just naturally happen that way?
It was not the intent. And in the beginning, I really just showed jewelry on social. And I would show myself, because I was also simultaneously my only model, you know, as a one-woman show for many years. And so I would show myself in terms of, like, style. You know, here's how I'm wearing this ring today. And, like, I recommend wearing it with this top. And it was very much about style. And I started to realize from all of the feedback that people wanted more of me. And I think I didn't realize the benefit then, and I surely recognize it now. Being able to be a personality-led brand definitely differentiates you in a space. You know, to be a face behind a brand can be really, really powerful. And so the more we tested showing my life and the more it worked, the more we started to build it into, like, an actual social strategy. So I actually enjoy doing it. I think it's fun. I mean, not every day. Like, when I was pregnant, I was nauseous for 7 months. And so, no, I didn't want to be on social. It was torture. But otherwise, I don't mind it. And it's now a full-blown strategy to show as much of what's happening in my life as possible, and, like, introducing my friends and, you know, missing flights in Aspen and all of that.
Like, so funny. So, I mean, first of all, your friend's ring falling under the dresser. If you guys aren't following Ring Concierge, you have to, because it's, yes, it's amazing jewelry. It's so pretty. Actually, my VP of operations is obsessed. She wears this one ring every single day that's from Ring Concierge. And she was freaking out that you were coming on the podcast. But it's the other content aside from the jewelry that I'm so excited. Every time I, like, refresh Instagram, I'm like, there has to be a story from Ring Concierge today.
Yeah, it's all true. You know, I try to really be honest. There's nothing we're concocting. It really is just my life. And then when things go wrong, of course, we're like, perfect. Let's show that this disaster that's about to take place and the lost ring. And we were so hungover and couldn't find it for literally 8 hours. We didn't know where her ring was. But luckily, we were so hungover, you almost don't care. You know, like, it's okay. We'll get it eventually.
Oh, my. And then who found it?
She found it. She, like, saw a glimmer, like, in our, you know, the dark room of our hangover, like, from under the dresser. But
wow,
we knew we'd find it.
So having another successful entrepreneur who's a mom sitting next to me, I always get this one weird question. And I'm curious to see if you also get this weird question of, how does your husband feel having a successful wife? And I always look at them and I'm like, what is that supposed to mean? Like, are we not allowed to be successful? And it's such an interesting question that I always get. Do you experience that?
I don't. People have never asked me, but I'm sure they wonder. And I am very lucky, and it's complete, like, this is the truth, that he couldn't be he's such a big cheerleader and loves the business. He has his own business as well. So we're both kind of entrepreneurial. It's just in us and we can't help ourselves. We love it. So he gets super involved when we're thinking about big initiatives, and he comes from a finance background. So I pick his brain all the time on finances, because that is not my strong suit. I'm the first to say, like, I should not be in charge of finances. He is so supportive. He's so into it. He loves it. He's so proud of me. Like, he tells people all the time. Yeah, he's very confident. He's, like, the most, maybe too confident, like, the most confident person you'll ever meet. So I don't think my success makes him feel any kind of way except for, like, happy for the both of us.
That's how it should be.
How's your husband?
He's the same. And I say that every time someone asks the question. He's in real estate, but I feel like when you're in real estate, it's like you're kind of an entrepreneur within that world, because you're running your own business essentially. And he was the one who actually pushed me to, like, leave the corporate world and start my own thing. He lets me do my thing. I let him do his thing. We're, like, very independent from each other, but come together when we need to, and it just works. We've been together for almost 10 years now, so it works.
Totally.
I'm like, there's nothing wrong with it. He loves it.
And, like, in the beginning of our careers when I was in fashion, you make no money in fashion. Like, living in New York City, after I went shopping with my paycheck, which is, of course, what I did to try to, like, continue to fit in the fashion world, I had $0 left, you know? So he kind of put in his time in our relationship in the first, you know, probably 5-6 years of really supporting us, it shifting, but having a successful company. I think in every relationship, there's times where you have to kind of let the other person run with something and support them. And I'm sure it'll continue to flow that way throughout our lives.
Yeah. We're really lucky to have cheerleader husbands.
Yes.
Who are also dominating their workplace. Okay. I want to take it back to Ring Concierge and the office culture and just, like, everything that is the business. What is the hardest part about being a a CEO?
I think, and we talked a little bit, you and I, about this earlier. I do think managing the people in the team can be really difficult if you have zero HR background, which I had zero HR background. And it's understanding how to motivate people, you know, in individual ways and how to create an exciting work environment. All of that I'm not great at. And luckily, very early on, I brought someone in who specialized in HR, and she's actually now our president. Her name's Katie, and she's incredible. And so outsourcing that as soon as possible made a huge difference for me, because it was taking up so much of my time to try to figure out how to grow a team and how to manage them. You know, we're at 40 people, so it is not realistic for me to spend my time managing and trying to cultivate 40 people, and I'm not great at it. So I had a hard time with that in the early years, and thank God that's now in a really great place and the environment's so fun. But what did you find to be a big challenge?
I feel like it changes depending on like where the company is at in its growth period. But right now it is managing people's personalities. And like, I'm being told by like business advisors, like to do this and hear them out and try to give what the company is asking for. And then I do that, then I'm told I'm being too nice. And I'm like trying to navigate this like perfect middle ground of, you know, well, first of all, the generation below us, I think, is just different. They view work differently. They view what work-life balance is differently. Like when I was fresh out of college, I had to be the first one in the office and the last one out.
Oh, for sure.
I had to be there before my boss and I had to leave after my boss. And sometimes that meant my hours were 8:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. That's what I was told. I had to be at work. I was getting paid for my hours. That was it. It is very different now. And so being so accustomed to a way that, you know, work was, I don't know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago is not how it is today. And so trying to like get in the brain of the younger generation and understand what motivates them, what pisses them off, what do they find as a benefit in the company? You know, what might motivate one person doesn't motivate the other person. So how do I find that middle ground? That is my hardest journey right now.
I think COVID made it so much worse with the newer generation thinking like, well, they can just work from home forever. We sell a product. We have a tangible good. And maybe there's certain roles that can be remote, but the majority of the roles have to touch the product and be involved with it. And it's
totally
such a challenge hiring right now, because there's, you know, like if you're in a product role of any capacity, you need to be in the office 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I don't care if you think you can maybe do part of your job from home. You can't. Come on. So we've been having a hard time hiring because people want to like work from home. And I'm like,
yes,
this is we're a retailer. We develop product. We have a tangible good. Like if you want to work from home, this is not the right job for you.
Yes. We warn every single person before hiring them that this is an in-person job. It is 5 days a week. It is, you know, the average hours of 9 to 5. I also think that I can't let some people work from home and then like make the whole creative team and production team come in 5 days a week. It doesn't work like that. It's unfair. Right now, that's the hardest. Before it was, I don't know, I guess hiring out of desperation.
Totally.
That's been the hardest. But we just had this one guy, which stay tuned because we interviewed him for the VP of marketing role that we're hiring for right now. And we have them complete a project. We decided to pass. He was a great guy. The chemistry in our interview was amazing. It was like he got out and the whole team was like, you guys were in there for so long. Like, did he get the job? And we're like, actually, no. But then he said to the recruiter, he was like, tell them I want to work for them and show them what I can do until they find someone. They don't have anyone right now. So ask them to hire me for 2 months and tell me what their priorities are and let me show them that I'm capable of this job. Ooh. Until they find someone. And I was
love
like,
that.
Okay. Like I said, yes. I was,
smart
why not?
Move. That's so smart on his end.
The initiative. I've never seen any. I was like, that's refreshing. Refreshing.
I would say that the one quality everybody on the team has is they're really hardworking. And I think we make it really clear during the interview process. Maybe we even scare people about what it takes to be successful at a rapidly growing company. And if you're not willing to put in the work, like
it's not the right fit. When it comes to creative, I'm very specific on like the ideas and what we're doing. I'm sure you can relate.
Yes.
And I need it to be different than what other people are doing, or else we're going to just fall flat in a saturated world.
Totally.
So, which actually I do want to talk about, because you are in jewelry. It is, there is, I want to say, thousands of companies out there that sell jewelry, if not hundreds of thousands. I mean, you walk just down the street from my office, there's a really popular jewelry store that everyone goes to. So how do you go about differentiating Ring Concierge? And then how do you, what do you think makes the brand resonate with your consumers?
I think we do this in a few ways. So one, using social media in a really big way has been, for in terms of brand recognition and top of funnel, like a game changer for us. It's our number one, you know, resource in terms of new customer acquisition. A lot of jewelry brands use Instagram, but we got on really, really early. And mm-hmm. so we, you know, we have 500,000 followers. So that makes a big difference when you have one of the biggest accounts. And then we work really hard to keep our product prices as low as possible. Mm-hmm. So obviously everything is gold and diamond. So there is like a bare minimum we have to charge because materials and labor are expensive. But we don't mark things up the way most brands do. You know, we're not working at like a 300% markup like you pay at Cartier. We work really, really tight on margins so that it's more accessible. And so because of that, we have a much broader target audience that we can go after in a category that is inherently luxury. And I think using me and, you know, our PR tries to get me out there as much as possible and showing my face so you feel a connection. It's not just jewelry you're buying. You know who's developing it, who's behind it. You connect with me personally because you also have, you know, a crazy baby or missing flights to Aspen, and just like creating this brand loyalty because you, you know, like the personality of the brand. That's been super, super effective for us.
So I have another interesting question that I always think about being on like the jewelry side of owning a brand, you know, with Set, when we're able to easily spot when Kylie Jenner is wearing Set because it says Set on the product. Mm-hmm. How do you, you know, see those like proud moments of like, oh, so-and-so, Hailey Bieber is wearing my earrings, or so-and-so's in our necklace, or whatever it might be, because people do like to see that. So how are you able to, besides something that I'm going to get to after this, which is your most famous ring setting that I told my husband already, my next ring has to be that. But how are you able to be like, that's a Ring Concierge piece? Because also you have people who copy you. All yes. the time, especially yeah. with your Illusion Emerald band that I also, I mean, I'm obsessed with every piece you make, but that being one of them, how do you like navigate that?
I mean, I think a few ways. We're direct to consumer, right? So it's pretty easy to know if somebody's
wearing your stuff.
Yeah. Like if Kylie Jenner shops with us, we would know.
Yeah.
She hasn't. We'd like that. I mean, I think we just know our product really, really well. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of tell. There's definitely been times where we're like zooming in on a picture on a website. We're like, is she wearing us? Is she not? And then we'll dig through the customer database and be like, oh my God, it is her. But yeah, I mean, and when it comes to like knockoffs, it gets a little trickier, but we typically know who we've been working with yeah. and whether or not it's our piece or just something
like an organic relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. Well, how do you deal with people who copy you?
So we go about it a few ways. Obviously there's certain things we have trademarked and of course then like the legal team gets involved, but should I talk about it now? The ring, the whisper thin,
the whisper thin.
So our best-selling engagement ring and the most popular engagement ring is called the Whisper Thin. And it's a super, super thin band where the diamond just looks like it's floating on your finger. We've had this ring now for like 5-6 years, a long time. It's the number one knocked-off ring in the industry right now. So everybody is screen grabbing this ring and they like walk into their local jeweler and say, can you make this for me?
Of course.
What we try to tell people, and this is the truth, is that we have perfected making this ring in a way where it's super safe to wear and it's super durable. And you can actually, you know, run around all day wearing this ring and not have to worry about it bending. If you don't know how to make it right to go that thin, you're just going to have problems down the road. And so we've seen so many people who tried to knock it off and then they end up coming to us to reset their ring because they're like, it doesn't look as pretty. It's bending. You know, my jeweler didn't know how to make it, so he made it way too wide. So we just really stand by our quality. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't, like, yeah. run after every person that's trying to copy you.
And but cease and desist doesn't work, no. by the way. Does
no.
not work.
So we just try to be the best at it. And our prices are actually really competitive. So if you do come to us to price compare with, like, a local jeweler, you'll be like, oh, my God, their price is the same. Why wouldn't I get the real deal?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a ton of sense. Shifting gears to being a new mom and an entrepreneur, What was that transition like for you? Because I think you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I remember back when you were pregnant, you were nervous about what it was going to be like to now, you know, have a child and also have your child that is ring concierge. So what was that transition like for you and how is it going now?
So I put off having kids for a really long time because I was super career focused and I was always the type of person that I'm not like that maternal. I was never really, really super into babies the way like a lot of my friends were. So I just kept putting it off and putting it off because like I'm building the company. It's not possible to have a baby and do this at the same time. And during the pandemic, I was like, okay, perfect timing. We can't go anywhere anyway. I'm stuck at home. Let me get this pregnancy over with. And it's been, well, I should also say we spent those 10 months hiring as much as possible mm-hmm. because I knew that A, I was going to be on maternity leave and so many departments were very dependent on me, too dependent on me.
How long did you last, be honest?
Maternity leave?
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of wrote it out.
Oh.
I never fully signed off. I was, you know, literally in the like hospital, Instagramming and stuff, but I removed myself from meetings for like 5 months because we spent the whole pregnancy building out the teams to not be dependent on me. And it actually was the right thing to do for the business regardless in terms of just business continuity. It wasn't sustainable for so many teams to report directly into me.
Yeah.
And I'm not good at everything. Like they shouldn't have been coming to me for like we needed experts in different areas. So we built it all out and the balance has actually been great.
Wow.
Like shockingly, it's going really well.
I would love to take a page out of your book, to be honest. I was slacking during labor. And I was back in office 3 weeks later.
Yeah. No.
Not full days. Okay. I slowly I'll stop in just for the morning or I'll come for the morning meeting. And then slowly I was like, okay, I'm going to stay for half the day. And then at one point work was getting just so busy that, you know, they basically were like, we kind of need you more in the office. Can you stay till 5? And so now I'm there 9 to 5. But I think I'm going to slow down more with my second child because I did not take maternity leave. I didn't experience that like full on couple months of bonding, you know, with your child that so many people get. And it was hard. And I think I just threw myself in way too quickly, like for sure.
That's really quick. I think I went a little too long, but it was also a weird time. It was like peak pandemic where no one was really in the office anyway. But I think this time I would actually do a much shorter maternity leave. Not 3 weeks, though.
Not 3 weeks. No. Yeah, no. I'm definitely, this time around, I think I'm going to take, like, I want to say 2 months.
Yeah.
And then I'll come back in. I feel like 2 months sounds doable, but we'll see. Don't hold me to that, you guys. I might come in sooner because that's just how my brain works. So you have over 40 employees, two physical retail locations. And I just saw that one of them got robbed in New York City.
Yes.
And then it was like back up and running like within 24 hours or something like that. What do you do if all your jewelry gets robbed? Obviously, you have insurance.
Yes. So, yeah, we have our main fulfillment center and where all of the website is fulfilled out of is not in the store in New York City. So that's completely separate, super secure, super safe. So, you know, the majority of our inventory isn't in the store. But we do have a store on Bleecker Street in the West Village, and it was robbed in the middle of the night. And it takes a lot for me to get upset. You know, when I got the phone call, I was like, okay, is anyone hurt? No. Okay, great. You know, that's what insurance is for. It's not the end of the world. I really don't get upset over anything. But a couple like really cool things came out of it, which is crazy to say about a robbery. One, the store team had the entire store rebuilt and back open in 2 business days.
That's crazy.
Like glass needed to be replaced. Like it was a mess in there. And two, the marketing team just started to like spiral with ideas. And they're like, why don't we turn this around? Why don't we make this instead of this like, you know, scary, not good experience? Why don't we make this empowering? And we decided to share it on social because I think most jewelry brands would be very hush-hush about being robbed. You know, they wouldn't say anything. They're just like, oh, store's closed for renovations. So I started talking about it and people got very invested in the robbery. And we had the highest store reviews we've ever had in the history of Ring Concierge. We got the most DMs we've ever received. People were so invested in this robbery. And so Tori, who's on my marketing team, just started to like spiral with like her like questionable marketting brain. You're like, is this like, I don't know if you're like mad scientist or if this is good, but keep going. She developed these totes and like created these newspapers about like we were robbed or reopened. And we created this whole like marketing campaign around
it. I saw that.
And had it up and running in 2 days and the store reopened and there was this big line and everyone was carrying around these like robbery totes around the West Village. And it was fun. Like
that is so
cool. It doesn't have to be crappy. You know, like you can turn things around and make them fun.
I want to talk about, so my listeners in terms of age are just all over the place. I have moms. I have, you know, people who are looking to get engaged. Then I have people who are in college. I have it all. But the one thing that I didn't know when I went to get engaged was like cut, color, clarity, the whole nine yards. And then there's like so many letters. I know like the clearest diamond starts at D and then you go into like SI1, SI2, VVS. I'm like, this is a different language I'm being, you know, told about with diamonds. Like, where do you start with educating someone on, they come to your office, I want to buy an engagement ring for, you know, my girlfriend, or they come together, we're looking at engagement rings. What do you ask them? What's the first question?
The first, I mean, look, the answer is typically the same for most people, but we always ask, you know, what is your priority? Is your priority size? Is your priority the quality? Do you want a balance? And like the women always say size above all else. And the guys always say quality, right? Mm-hmm. So we try to get them in a place where they're both getting what they want. And it just comes down to education. It sounds really complicated at first. Like you mentioned, there's color, clarity, cut, carat weight, shapes, da, 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 da. But when you start to break it down and we're like, okay, here's at the end of the day, we're not going to give you a diamond that doesn't look right. It's going to be eye clean of inclusions. It's going to look white. And above all else, it needs to sparkle because that's what makes it pretty.
Yeah.
But we can try to play around with that and get you as low as possible in the color and clarity scale. So the majority of your budget goes to carat weight. So you have a killer looking diamond, but you're not overspending on quality that you're never going to know the difference once you walk out of this room. And that's the balance we always work with on when we're working with clients is how do we get you this gorgeous looking diamond that's really big without you spending on all the things that you truly can't see, like a flawless diamond.
Yeah.
It looks the same, I promise you, as a VS diamond. And the price is going to be like 70% less. You know, it's a huge price difference when you start to go up in the color and clarity scales.
That is, I mean, I think it's something that I respect the most about Ring Concierge because I went through the process of shopping for diamonds. And I think this was the moment that I fell in love with your transparency, because when you shop for diamonds, I feel like, well, it was male dominated. I didn't work with any women, which I feel like you should be working with women when you're making a decision like this. Like, you get it, you know?
Yeah, like, we're the end user. So yes. Why aren't we more involved in this industry?
1,000%. And they're not, yes, they're educating me on all of the things you just mentioned, but something that they're not doing is, or that didn't happen with me, was you posted this story. I want to say it was a couple years ago. It was about oval diamonds, which is my engagement ring. I can't wear it right now because my fingers are too swollen. And it had a bow tie. It has a bow tie. And you posted about, you know, why that makes a diamond look different. And I'm looking at my diamond as I'm watching your story. And that's when I was like, I went to my husband and was like, when I do my upgrade ring, we're going to Ring Concierge because she just is so educated. And I was like, this whole thing. But I think that's what I respect the most about you is like, you're so transparent on your Instagram. Like, look for this, don't look for this. Like, your thoughts on lab grown diamonds, which is a whole new world right now for people out there, that which I want to ask your thoughts on it for everyone to hear. But you don't just like care about getting a check or getting, you know, the money for this ring. You really want your customer to understand what they're buying, and you're not going to sell something that doesn't make you comfortable or doesn't make sense. And I think that's what makes the experience so amazing, is if they go buy a ring, if we're talking bridal, because you do sell so much amazing other jewelry, but they're not going to get something that they're going to be, you know, disappointed with, or years down the road, find something out like under black light, it turns blue. What is that? Fluorescence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you're totally right. And it's not difficult to operate that way, right? It's not hard to be transparent. Like, if you stand behind what you're selling, but it's just focusing on what actually looks really pretty and is a great price above trying to move product. That's the mentality we always take. And the sales team, they're so devoted to each customer and making sure they're going to love the ring. They'll tell them, like, okay, this one's like a little more expensive, and like, but I'd actually rather you buy this one because it looks just as good and you'll save money. And they're commission-based, you know, they would make more money on the more expensive diamond, and they don't operate that way, which is, I think, so great.
What is your thoughts on lab-grown diamonds?
So lab-growns are very interesting, and we sell them. So we, you know, we're a concierge. If you want to buy a mined diamond, a lab-grown diamond, a blue sapphire, I don't care. That our job is to, you know, give you what you want and make sure it's beautiful. The way I would think about lab-growns is they are significantly less expensive than a mined diamond, which is, you know, the appeal to most people. That's why people are really interested, if we're being honest. It's not so much about sustainability or anything like that. It really, if people are being honest, it's because they want a bigger diamond that costs less.
Yeah.
So diamonds, mined diamonds, they do hold value over time. And if you hold on to it long enough, you know you're going to get some level of money back if you ever need to sell it or pass it down to your children. There's hundreds of years of history on diamond pricing, so it's a pretty sure thing. Lab-grown diamonds, their prices have been coming down year over year because more people are starting to make them and supply is going up. So the supply is drastically going up and the prices are starting to drop. So the issue is, if you buy one today, let's say for $10,000, it very well could be worth $5,000 in
a
couple years. And so you just can't look at it as an investment. You just have to think about, I just want the biggest diamond possible. I don't care if it's worth a lot less. I just want the biggest diamond possible right now. And if that's all you care about, great. And you're not planning to use that as an up, like to trade in the future, fine. But if you want something that you know is going to hold a value, then you really should go for a mined diamond.
Good to know. So if anyone's looking to get engaged, you have the full education right here on Ready, Set, Spill. What can we expect from the brand next?
So the industry is super interesting. It is a $100 billion industry in the U.S., but exceptionally fragmented. 90% of the industry is owned by mom and pop shops, and only 10% is owned by like these big publicly traded companies. So the ability to take market share is very, very real in this industry. It's not like the types where you have like an Amazon that just owns the industry and you can't compete. You know, it doesn't exist in jewelry. Like Tiffany, for example, makes up 2% of the U.S. market share.
That's wow.
And they're one of the biggest retailers.
How do they get away with? I remember when we first looked, I went to Tiffany just to look. I knew I wasn't going to buy from them. They put a one carat diamond on me. And it was like $45,000.
Yep.
I was like, excuse me, what? That is crazy. And I was like, well, we're not getting our ring from Tiffany. And that's when I was like, I'm not going to go to one of these like, you know, head honcho jewelry companies and buy my engagement ring from there.
Yep. It's crazy. They're just charging you for the name because their quality. And, you know, when it comes to these heritage jewelry brands, the quality isn't necessarily different than what you can get somewhere else. You're just paying for the name.
The brand name.
You know, for example, our head of production who oversees the production of all the engagement rings, QCs all of them, she comes from Harry Winston. You know, like she's the real deal. Our rings are insane, but the price is maybe like a third of what you're going to pay, if not a fourth, at a Harry Winston or a Tiffany for the same quality. And you can pick whatever quality diamond you want. You know, so it just makes no sense. And it's just, if you want to say, run around saying, I have a Tiffany ring and that makes you proud, go for it. But financially, it's like a very poor decision.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Okay. So tell me what else is coming.
So with that being said, we are very bullish and we want to be one of the biggest, you know, hopefully eventually the biggest privately held jewelry companies in the U.S. And we actually think we can get there. We have like a 5-year plan. It's nuts, but we're really focused on it. And we're super excited about physical retail expansion, which I never thought about physical retail. I was always e-commerce, except for bridal, which is by appointment. But after the pandemic, people are so craving in-person shopping. Mm-hmm. And when we opened this West Village store, it's a small store. We're like, okay, let's test physical retail. No one shops in person. Everyone shops online now. There is a line around the corner every single day to get in this store. So we're like, okay, there's a big opportunity here. We need more space. We need to create experiences. So we're trying to figure out all these ways to make the brand even more exciting. How can you feel like you're even more involved with us and further differentiate from all the competitors who aren't thinking this way in the jewelry space? Because it is such like a weird, antiquated, old industry.
It totally is. And I think something that you're also doing differently is you post like when you're thinking about a new line or a new piece, and this is not bridal, this is like your everyday jewelry, that whether it's like a necklace or a bracelet or an anklet, you say like, would you wear this? Or what do you think of this? And I like that. I'm like, I mean, I do this on set too. So I know why I do it on set, but as a customer of yours, I like that. I'm like, well, I picked that horseshoe necklace and now I know that it's coming. So I have to buy it because I picked it and she did it because I picked it. It's like, so, I mean, I love that you do it that way because it makes me invested in what you're doing.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's the same reason you do it. A, to not take advantage of 500,000 people who are engaged with the brand and get their opinion before you create a product. Like, why wouldn't you get their feedback?
Because
they might say, oh, that's horrible. I would never buy that. Like, great. Never mind. I'm not going to develop this product. But then also, yeah, like, so they feel so engaged and involved in the brand, and they're kind of they're our biggest cheerleaders because they feel like they've been with us and grown with us. So
totally.
I'm sure that's, you know, similar reasons that you're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, it is. But I also say every time, like, it's an anniversary or birthday or anything coming up, I'm like, if you buy anything Ring Concierge, I'll like it. And that's what I like the best because I'm picky. I'm very picky. No one ever knows what to get me as a birthday present or an anniversary or holiday, whatever it might be. And I'm like, anything Ring Concierge, because you do have that wide range of, like, you don't have to spend thousands of dollars to get something, and you can still, you know, style your jewelry with super expensive, not super expensive. And that's what I love. Okay, I have two more questions for you. If you weren't in jewelry, what would you do?
Oh, good question. And I think I would do something with interiors. I love interior design. It's like such a passion of mine. But my sister-in-law has a design firm. Her name is Devin Grace. She's incredible. It is so hard. I never realized until I saw the way, you know, she, like, a real designer works. Obviously, I didn't know how it worked. I just, you know, read Architectural Digest and fancied myself a designer. The amount of work it takes to do people's homes is insane. And after seeing how much she has to hustle, and she's incredible, I'm like, okay, oof, I picked the right career path. That's too much work for me. And I'm a hard worker, you know?
Yeah, you are. I mean, you're not wrong. I'm still working with my designer, who we started designing my house in May of last year. We're still working on it. I know.
Are you almost done?
We're done. So luckily the interiors are done with, like, a couple things that we have to, like, tie up. But now we're moving into the backyard because we're turning my garage into an ADU, and we built a pool. And it's like, now we have to design, like, everything. Like, she's all about, like, well, the outside still has to tell the same story as the inside. I'm like, you do you, sister. I don't know. Whatever is going to work. But I mean, it's also hard working with me because I am so particular. So, you know, it's not just like, yeah, that looks great. That looks great. I'm like, no, don't like that. Show me options here. Hate that. Don't want to do that.
And I think home, because it's a home, people are so emotionally invested in every single choice, which makes it even more difficult, I would think, to, like, have that be your job.
Yeah. Well, you picked the right career, I think.
Don't regret that. Yeah.
What is one piece of advice you'd like to leave with our listeners?
I would say, and I feel like this is a little cliche to say, but I really mean it, if you are an entrepreneur or have your own company or a side hustle or anything that you kind of is your own, trust your gut and really go with it. Get experts in the areas you know you're not strong at. You know, don't assume you're good at everything because nobody is. But the things that you feel really passionately about, like whether it be a creative decision, don't let other people or trends sway you. Stick to your gut, like, you know, it's your business, it's your project, you know best, and really keep that in mind, because I think that's hard for people when they're starting out.
No, I think it's so true. I just had this conversation with she's like a second mom and business advisor, and I told her, like, I should have just trusted my gut on this one, and she said on the other end, she's like, you should always trust your gut. You can't, like, listen to other people because it's going to backfire, or like, which it did in this situation. And she was like, you have to trust your gut. You do, because it's your company at the end of the day. You make the decisions.
Yep.
So I love that piece of advice. Well, if people want to find you on social media, where can they find you?
At Ring Concierge.
And that's on Instagram.
Yep, on Insta. Yeah, we're at Ring Concierge on Instagram, or ringconcierge.com if you want to shop.
Definitely shop on ringconcierge.com. You won't regret it. Or send it to your boyfriend or your partner or your husband or your grandma or your mom. Send it to everyone because you'll always find something that you like. Thank you so much for coming on today. I was so excited for this one because I could talk about jewelry for forever. And I was so happy to meet you in person finally.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.
Yay.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to follow us on your podcast listening platform. Share your favorite moments with me on social media and tune in next week. Again, I'm your host, Lindsay Carter, and this is Ready, Set, Spill.